Welcome back. A couple quietly raises their children in a suburb of Boston, and then just as quietly, they move away. A grandfather, traveling in a Spanish-speaking country with his gay son, who's adopting a little boy, worries he won't find enough Jewish people to pray on Yom Kippur. A family walks through Harvard Square outside Boston, one toddler in a stroller, a preteen walking alongside. But then a crowd separates them. Little Sophie stands still, waiting for her parents to notice she's gone.
Standing still was what she was supposed to do when she became separated from a parent. If both of us run around, you see, the chances are that we'll never be in the same place at the same time, her mother had explained. Like atoms, Sophie said. I guess so. But if one of us stays put, the moving one will eventually cross the still one's path. It made sense. Sophie had imagined that, in such an event, she would turn cool, a lizard under a leaf. Instead, she turned hot, even feverish. She sang, "Go tell Aunt Rhody," under her breath. The sign changed to walk. She sang Rhody backward.
Edith Perlman, reading from her short story Inbound in her new collection Binocular Vision. We should say her name more recently has been Edith Perlman. Why isn't she famous? As a reviewer asks in the New York Times, and as Anne Patchett echoes in her introduction to Edith Perlman's new collection, in which Anne also says she once read an Edith Perlman story hoping to underline good sentences to quote later and ended up underlying the entire book. 75-year-old Edith Perlman has been included in the Best American Short Story Compilations. She's published 4 collections of her work. She won this year's Penn Malamud Award for Best Short Story Writing. And Binocular Vision is a finalist for the National Book Award. So if you haven't already heard of her, you soon will, as Edith Perlman joins us in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you.
And we should say Brookline's own. You live just a few blocks from here in Brookline, Massachusetts.
I do.
Is that, by the way, Godolphin?
I pronounce it Godolphin.
Godolphin.
I don't know where the word came from.
It's the name that you use for the town that a lot of your subjects live in.
That's right.
Which is Brookline, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Although it's a Brookline that I play with a great deal and put things in that aren't there and take things out that maybe should stay there. So it's like Brookline. I won't say it is Brookline.
Well, where do these stories come from? Do you have to have a little bit of an experience with part of the story to write it?
Sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes a story has a bit of biographical experience of my own. Sometimes it's invented entirely. Sometimes it's dreamed.
Dreamed.
They come from everywhere.
You wake up and have had a dream?
In Inbound, there's a last scene in the subway station, and I dreamed that, and then I had to write the story leading to it.
Backwards.
Or frontwards, but I knew the end.
Right. You already knew. And can we say? Because this is the story of the family that gets separated. And it is just a couple of pages, but my heart was in my throat. You know, they can't find it. It's a whole movie, Lost. So much emotion, so much heart pounding. And then sort of the waters are still again. And what are you saying there?
I think that's a fair representation of the way emotional things happen in life, a great building up, a height, and then a slow descent.
Right. And yet I wondered if it was also a Jewish story. And I'll explain, because you are claimed by, for instance, New York's The Jewish Week. They call you the Bard of Brookline, but also call you a Jewish writer. And I wasn't sure if they meant that often you refer to people who have, you know, the Jewish faith, as in the grandfather who's looking for people to pray with him on Yom Kippur.
I think what they mean is that I'm a writer who is interested in Jewish people and Jewish themes, and often write stories having to do with holidays or the Holocaust, many things that are Jewish.
Some reviewers have said dislocation and diaspora.
Yes.
Right, so I'm thinking of that family. Oh, they're all split up. They can't find each other, but then a reunion. And so I thought, well, I wonder if that's a little mini.
Well, I think you found something that I didn't exactly mean to put in, but perhaps is there. There's an old statement that writers use, trust the tale, not the teller. If you have found something in my story that is Jewish, then it's Jewish.
And why the short story? Because some of these stories, they're so dense. There's so much going on, even when there's nothing going on. Even when it's a little girl lost on a platform. Or I'm thinking of another one. It's a food pantry, I think, or a shelter for
yes.
women. there's not earth-shaking events going on, but there's a lot going on. Why the short story? Why not pull that taffy-like into a book?
Well, I think that's what would happen. It would be taffy-like, and it would get thinner and thinner and less interesting to read. To me, something that is interesting to read if every word counts. And that's why I like to write the short story, because every word must count in a short story. Revision and revision and revision squeezes out the words that are not necessary.
Some of the stories end kind of abruptly. The subway story, suddenly, as we said, suddenly it's over. Or Valleys, the story of a nanny, an older nanny, and the different families that she lived with and interviewed with. And you're wondering, where is this going? Each family up and leaves as children grow up, and she starts with a new family. And then, bam, suddenly someone from one of the first families comes back, and we're told something that makes that character incredibly different in our eyes.
Well, there is a revelation in Valleys, and so once the revelation is made, I feel the story has come to a proper end. You are no longer bewildered by Valleys' behavior.
By the governess's behavior. But again, it's a short story, so there's not the next chapter.
No.
You know, now that we know that about her, we carry on and we don't. That's it.
Would you like to know more about her?
Well, I think I would, so please, could you?
Could I write another story?
You do that.
Yes, I do, and there's one character, Sonia, who appears in, I think, four stories in the book.
What happens there? As you are writing the first story, you're thinking, that one, that little character I just mentioned, she's going to take center stage in another story, is that?
Sometimes that happens. I can't let go of the character. I want to see what happens next. And sometimes I have an idea for a story, and I think, oh, well, the heroine could be so-and-so from the story I wrote last year. Let's see how that works.
So you introduce them to each other, these people in your head and on paper. We want to ask you about the publisher. Mm-hmm. What kind of role does a publisher play for someone like you, famous in some circles but not quite? You were the debut author for Lookout Press. I think one of our colleagues, Steve Almond, is also on
Steve Almond is at mm-hmm. Lookout Press, too.
What's the relationship there?
The editor and publisher, they're two people. Lookout Press has a staff of two. It's a very small outfit and a very wonderful one. They want to bring to the public notice writers that they feel have been undeservedly neglected, and they chose me to be the first undeservedly neglected
writer. There you go again. The why isn't she famous? Edith Perlman. It's like
right.
Your long name.
That's right.
Well, and here you are now, a finalist for a National Book Award with this collection. How does this feel now with this nomination? You've had other awards, but you're getting famous. I mean, how does that all feel to you?
It feels very nice. How can it not feel nice? However, I always had a following. It was small, but it was devoted. And that's really all I wanted. So that everything that has happened with Binocular Vision is gravy. Yeah. I already had the stew. I've had a wonderful writing life up until now, and I hope to continue it after the fuss has died down and everybody's forgotten me again. What is most wonderful is to write stories and have a certain amount of people enjoy them and tell you so.
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed your stories.
Thank you.
Edith Perlman, her collection of short stories, Binocular Vision, as we said, a finalist for the National Book Awards. Edith, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
It's a pleasure, Robin.